This is Cityscape. I'm Jim Eltoff. Over the course of the summer, NPR has been doing a series called In Search of the Great American Symphony. And a part of that series is a conversation with the music director of one of America's finest symphony orchestras, our own David Robertson. And here is that conversation.
When we talk about the Great American Symphony, and we compare it to something like the Great American Novel, each person, if you say, what is the great American novel, is going to say, well, for me, it's Moby Dick. For me, it's To Kill a Mockingbird. For me, it's Infinite Jest. For me, it's The Recognitions. For me, it's Babbitt. You know, and you keep getting all of these different answers because, in fact, the whole nature of our experience as human beings is multifaceted and unending. And we look for people who are able to express something in a way that is unlike any other that's been expressed. One of the breakthrough works for me is John Adams' Harmonielehre, which, you know, goes right to the heart of this. I think if he had called it symphony, it would have been much harder to have it performed, because when he was writing it in the mid-80s, symphony was looked on by a lot of sophisticated people in the musical world as something of a dead form. When I heard this piece the first time, I was bowled over by it, and I was struck precisely because it was able to expand past the notion of a genre or a style. It went beyond the idea of what minimal music was supposed to be capable of expressing, and added a type of richness while remaining true to Adams' personal style. You have to be aware that when you are writing a large symphonic work, that you are stepping into a river that is already flowing with many pieces that are coming down the line. And so Adams very clearly relates his work to pieces of the past. The kind of hammer blow chords at the beginning could refer to something Beethovenian in terms of their rhetoric. But he immediately takes it and says, this is a gesture that I love, but it came to me in a different way, which is very personal, and I am going to turn it into something which is very personal. Between the kind of energy, the poise, the lyricism of the first movement, the really deep suffering that is evoked in the second movement, and the sense of, to use Kundera's phrase, the unbearable lightness of being that we have in the last movement, which, you know, becomes this boiling sea of orchestral sound that is almost like a single measure of Beethoven, but just remixed exponentially. You have a work which feels distinctly American, which sums up a period of time in a way that suddenly becomes timeless. The amount of energy it takes in terms of sheer manpower to get something played today, and the expenses involved with this, tend to push most people away from adventurousness. You know, I'm seen by many people as having horns and a forked tail because I actually love to discover something that has not been played before. One of the things that I've found, however, is that when it comes to these questions of symphonies, you really come down to the question of what is the highest quality. so you can have a really fabulous symphony from the end of the 19th century, such as the First Symphony by Vasily Kalinnikov, which is in G minor, and anyone who likes Tchaikovsky, anyone is going to adore this symphony on first hearing. But I have had to use extremely creative measures to get this symphony performed. And in fact, I have been unsuccessful except where I've been music director, because there's this notion of here's this big unknown symphony by someone whose name sounds like an automatic rifle. So what we come down to is people feel that their time as audience members is extremely restricted, and they really just want the best. What that tends to mean in concert organizations is that the concert organization will stick to something that Virgil Thompson referred to many years ago already as the 50, which is 50 works that the largest number of people can agree are great masterworks of classical music, and those are the ones that get played with the greatest frequency. I feel frustrated sometimes talking about classical music because most people pretend that classical music nowadays should work the same way it did during the time when we had an NBC symphony orchestra. And classical music is alive and well and all over the place, but it is not following models of previous generations because it is following the models of today's generations, which are radically different. And this is one of the things that is often surprising to me when you have classical music organizations looking, for example, at concert programs and not realizing that they're often putting together a program which would make perfect sense 100 years ago when no one could get to the concert hall by car and there was not a radio or there were no professional sporting teams. And so all of these things that we have now that are competing for our attention are one part of what classical music is dealing with. When one talks about doom and gloom, you know, in terms of the Great American Symphony, and it's hard to get them out, and you write one and it's never played, it is true that it has never been that easy to get your work performed immediately. Beethoven's concerts with the 5th and 6th symphonies and the 4th piano concerto, that same concert was promoted by Beethoven himself at his own expense. So I think that that's something that's always going to bedevil any creative artist. You know, I'm just thinking of Philip Glass, you know, having to drive a taxi to pay for the bills from Einstein on the Beach. At the same time, we now live in a period where a couple of technological miracles have allowed composers, if they do get an orchestra and a sympathetic music organization to front them, they can actually make a recording of their symphony which can be heard by people all around the globe in a way that was not possible at all, even 50 years ago. In addition, many composers nowadays are very conversant with MIDI technology, which is musical instrument digital interface, where on your computer, for very little money, you have programs that allow you to write and imitate the sounds of symphony orchestras and get a very close approximation of what your piece actually is going to sound like. And you can go on something like YouTube for no money, other than an internet connection, and see dedicated people who are working at helping budding composers learn how to make better sounds and better recordings of their pieces. And so this is something which has allowed a composer who otherwise might live in complete obscurity to find other people who really think the music that they're doing has worth and is interesting. And I think that's a hugely positive beacon on the horizon because it allows all of us to have the possibility to interact with music in many different ways.
That's David Robertson, the music director with the St. Louis Symphony, in a conversation produced by Tom Huizenga at NPR Music. You can hear more and read more about the Great American Symphony series at nprmusic.org. So when we began Cityscape today, we asked if any of you had suggestions or nominees for Great American Symphony, and we received some of those, and we're going to listen to excerpts from a few of them, and I'll tell you what we're listening to after we hear it. That is an excerpt from one of the most beloved pieces of American music, George Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, not technically a symphony, but powerful piece of music. Another noted American composer and conductor was suggested by another of our listeners, and let's listen to a little of that. Very American-sounding music, in spite of the French title. That's the overture to Candide, composed by Leonard Bernstein. Another of you suggested a piece that I think all of you will recognize by the man that is probably the dean of American composers, and this is it. That is not the theme to ABC Sports. In fact, that is Aaron Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, which is part of his Symphony No. 3. And finally, another suggestion from one of our listeners, which might be dismissed on a technicality, except this is music that is so American, which I think you'll recognize when you hear it. That is an excerpt from the Czech composer Antonín Dvořák, his Symphony No. 9 in E minor, which is known as From the New World. That's music that Dvořák wrote when he summered in Spilsbury, Iowa, where there is a Czech community. And he'd come to the United States, and he would summer in Iowa. And music scholars over the years have found, they think, evidence of African-American spirituals, of Native American rhythms, of American folk rhythms, all contained in the magnificent New World Symphony. Spillville, not Spielberg, there we go, but it is Iowa. Up next, let's eat, or let's figure out what to eat on our soundbite segment with Sauce Magazine when Cityscape continues on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.